after the party, it's the Waffle House. If you ever been here, you know what I'm talking about. Where people don't dance, all they do is this. And after the original, you know what it is.
Welcome to Atlanta
Remix. It had to go down. I got something else to tell you about the new Motown. Where people don't visit, they move out here. And ain't no telling who you might see up in Lenox Square. I don't know about you, but I miss the free.
Good day, everyone. Welcome back to the Atlanta Podcast. I'm your host, Mappy Davis, coming to you on a holiday Monday here in downtown Atlanta at WeWork. I'm looking at Atlanta. I can see the monstrosity known as Mercedes-Benz. I can see Georgia State Field, used to be Turner Field over there. I'm at WeWork and no one's here and I love it. I love it when no one's here. I have it all to myself. And I want to bring you an episode today with somebody that I've known for a really long time, someone that I haven't been close to in recent years, but that I reached out to because I thought it'd be fun to talk to. Now, as you've seen here in the Atlanta Podcast, once upon a time, we would only speak to people physically in person, did not want to have a Skype call podcast. But with COVID, what are you going to do? So it became a good excuse to get my actor friends that live in LA on the show. So we had Marc Maron. We had, I don't know if I even ever put up John Carroll Lynch, great character actor. But today, we've got another, I think he'd qualify as a that guy, Kelly Perrine. You see him and you go, oh, that guy. Because he's been on your TV and films for over 20 years. A quick read of his IMDb or career is going all the way back. Seinfeld, Drew Carey, Coach, Mad About You, Living Single, Hang With Mr. Cooper, Malcolm and Eddie, Steve Harvey Show, The Hughleys, How I Met Your Mother, Austin and Ally, Bernie Mac Show. He's been on every show. And we're going to talk to this man. He's a working actor. And this is kind of how it works. For those that don't know, not everybody becomes Tom Cruise. But a lot of people make a really nice living and do something they love called being a working actor. And Kelly was super nice to me back in the day. And I've just kind of watched his career from afar and always kind of stayed in touch. And I was like, dude, you should come on my podcast. We should talk to you and it'll be fun. So let's get into it. Let's not dilly-dally. Let's go to Kelly Perrine and I from very recently. Away we go.
You know, when you want to get
we're starting now. I want to know, first of all, are you in the same house that you were when I left?
I have been in this house for 20 years. I got this place back in 99.
Now, you don't have to give me a figure, but has it doubled or tripled in value?
It has gone up. I can sell it and pay off my student loans.
Wait a minute. You do not have student loans.
No, I don't have student loans anymore. But it was a good investment. I bought it 20 years, a great neighborhood here in Los Feliz. And
East Side was cool, though.
There was a couple of cool spots over here, but there wasn't really all that much, you know, going on. People were going down to Hollywood, doing all that type of stuff. Weren't a whole lot of party places that you could walk to. Right. So, I just stuck with it, you know, stayed in my little spot, and everything has, you know, grown and evolved, and there's a lot of hipster spots around me. But this is L.A., so No one's walking anywhere anyway. So you got to drive anyway. So
right, but there was definitely the focus was always like Hollywood and West Hollywood, West Hollywood, Beverly Hills, Santa Monica. You know what I mean? And like Hollywood, Los Feliz, that side wasn't much. And now, as far as I understand, because I haven't even lived there in a long time, Las Vegas, Silver Lake, even where like Marin lives over in Eagle Rock,
Silver
is like
Lake,
the shit
Echo,
now.
Silver Lake, Echo Park. Los Feliz, all these little areas right now are, you know, getting a little more gentrified and coming up. And so it's fun. It's fun to
can
be over
you
here.
Can you use the term gentrified when describing Hollywood?
Well, this part, Los Feliz, I don't know if you can in Los Feliz. Downtown is getting a little gentrified.
So I want to get to your exciting life and career. First of all, it's going to be great to catch up because I did move in 07, which is a miracle to me that like all that time has passed. But I just want to go to, so the first time I met you, so Eric Bosso and I, name from the past, Eric Bosso and I were high school friends that didn't go to high school together. He ran with like a different crew, but somehow the crews connected. And then boom, we're friends in late high school years, going into the college years. He moves out to LA. I'm like, I'm moving to LA. He's the one guy I knew. Like literally the one person. It's like one of those stories. I knew one guy. So I stayed on him and Scott Holmes' couch.
Yep. Yep.
For 3 weeks in the fall of 99. And after week number three, they were like, yeah, so get out.
I'd have been mad after week number two right. with you, but God bless him.
Right.
God bless him. So, yeah, those were back in the days. I've known Scott, when I talk about Scott, since I was 19 years old, because we were camp counselors together.
I did not know that. So that's how all. That's how this all happened. Because obviously, Eric, brought Eric your way.
He brought Eric in. So Scott and I have been friends for over 30 years. Eric Grosso, you know how it is. The crews kind of, you know, have expanded. And so once a cat is cool with the crew, they can kind of. Every once in a while, you know, pepper in somebody new.
So we might have a disaster here. This doesn't happen that often. Usually I can ignore it, but I heard something crash that might actually make me put you on hold. So,
well, hey, go ahead.
Just hang on. It might be okay.
I'm hunkered down. I got no kids. You let me know, baby. You handle it.
I want to know how you successfully avoided that. Did you ever want to get married? Did you have any serious relationships? Because you've been sort of happening single dude as long as I've known you.
Yeah, you know what? Here's what I truly think is the case. Look, I think I'm a decently bright guy. so I'm not going to make any type of excuses. I think my through line truly is I want to be able to do what I want to do when I want to do it. And for the, you know, people that I know that have gotten married, doesn't work that way.
Nope.
as far as I can tell.
Right.
You know, don't do it. And so what that through line has done is it makes it so that I have fantastic people in my life, fantastic ladies, girls that I date a, you know, good long time. But I think that what happens is the second they know, you know, that I'm not going to come around and they've wasted their time and they go, I'm gone. The second I know for sure I can't get them back. Right. The second after, that's when I go, I'm ready. Okay, I'm ready now. where are you going? I'm ready. It took 7 years and a day. If you could have only waited two. Now they're like, I'm out, motherfucker. I'm
right.
out.
Right.
So if I'm not making excuses, I probably want to do what I want to do. So I probably either sabotaged or, you know, just subconsciously gotten out of things. Because I don't want to have to answer to anybody.
Yeah. Well, I think, yeah. If you never want to have to be anywhere you don't want to do not have kids. That's.
But I mean, you know, I mean, but part of me sometimes goes, I'd rather be, you know, a dad than a husband per se, but I don't necessarily want to be, you know, one with well, the outfit without
why
the
why
other.
You just, why don't you just have a bunch of, you know, just have a bunch of baby mamas then. We'll just do that.
Well, because like, I'm trying not to be stereotypical. You know what I'm saying? Brother got a nice house. I'm trying to hold on to it. I'm vested up in this. I'm vested. I'm not trying to give half of that shit away.
All right. So when I meet you, right, in 99, the first time I went to your house, so I'm 27 and it's like, oh, this is like Swingers, right? It's like Swingers had like just come out like the year before. Yeah. So this is like 99, 2000. Swingers was, I think, 98. And it's like, oh, this is like happening. This is what I thought LA would be. This is a cool party. There's some attractive women here. Like, this has got it. We got it going on. Although one time I will say, props to you, Kelly. I'm sure you don't remember this. One time I came over to help clean up and hooked up with someone. And that doesn't usually happen. It's like, you know, like you call a few friends, hey, can you help clean up the day after the party? And I was like, sure, which whatever. I guess I was in a good mood. I wasn't that hungover or whatever. Anyway, and I hooked up with someone on the cleanup. So thanks for that, Kelly.
You're welcome. Don't tell your wife. Don't tell your wife.
No, please. Well, way before her. Way before her. I met her out there, but this is way before. But anyway, and I was
You know what? Some of my parties did kind of go 2 or 3 days. You know what I'm saying?
But that was never me. Like, I was never the 2 or 3 day guy. Like, I would pass out drunk, and then that was kind of it. And then I ended up getting sober. I don't know if you remember that about me, but I actually got sober relatively soon after moving to LA. But
Well, congratulations.
Thanks. But to me, this was like, oh, this is where it's at. And then the poker boom hit, and you became like the poker night house, which was awesome, right?
Yeah, it was fun. So, you know what? When I walked into this place, my house, here in Los Feliz, and – the thing about it, as you know, it's very unique. It's an open concept. There's a room upstairs that's a smaller room. Downstairs is kind of the whole master bedroom. And so a lot of families walked into here and they like didn't know where are we going to put little Johnny? Where are we going to put little Susie? They would be, you know, talk to real estate agents. They would be confused about where to put the spiral staircase. You know, families didn't know what to do with it. I walked in, I'm like, oh, shit. Oh, shit. 4-day swinger parties. Let's go. And so the house is just designed, you know, to have people in it, to have parties in it. And so when you were here, you know, the swinger days, we were kind of, you know, just partying from like Friday to Sunday, Monday. And then when the poker boom hit, I'm like, let's start up a poker game. And so
I want to say it was Tuesdays. Was it Monday or Tuesdays?
Well, I think for a while, it started off on Mondays because I had a TV show called, the One-on-One Days? And so I think we aired on Monday. And so we would watch the show and then play poker. And then it kind of turned into play poker and no one was watching the show. Then we moved it to a Wednesdays. And so that was a whole about 7 years of playing poker and trying to be swingers.
Right. And I met like some cool dudes that like, yeah, we'd go to other places and play cards. And I can't remember, like there was the two brothers I remember.
Oh, there was the Wilson sisters. We call them Dan and Glenn.
Dan and Glenn.
Yes. Still good friends. I actually was at, Dan's wedding 2 years ago.
And who is the dude, kind of a heavy set dude. I can't think of his name.
Well, there was everybody from, I'm trying to think back. There was, you know, the Wilson brothers, got Jay Lee, Volney, Bry, who I went to school with.
Bry lived there though, right?
Bry is a guy, you talk about, you know, knowing people for a long time. Bry, who was my roommate here for the first 10 years, I met on the first day we went to college. So we went to college together at Pomona College out here in Claremont. And so I met Bry, you know, a half an hour into my college education, my college days. And I lived upstairs, you know, from Bry. Bry lived downstairs. And how we went to school, there was, you have like what they call sponsor groups. So you have 9 females, people that are in a sponsor group, and 9 males, and that consists of your sponsor group. So Bry wasn't in our sponsor group, but Bry plowed through pretty much all of the females in my sponsor group. I'm like, motherfucker, don't you live downstairs? Yeah. He's always coming out of a room like, hey, man, sorry, hey, good to see you. How you doing? I'm like, God bless him. So I've been friends with Bry for, 30 plus years. And so he lived here. And so over the course of my 20 years, I've had 10 different people that have lived in the room. A lot of times it's folks who are transitioning or need to get back on their feet or, or trying to figure out how to navigate, you know, this crazy business that is Hollywood. And so a lot of times I'm like, just come over, hang out, spend a couple months. And all I ask is that you do work while you're here. You write that script you're working on, or you audition more than you otherwise would have. You actually use this time to actually do all the work that you say, you know, you want to do, you know? So a lot of folks, the guy who's in there now is a buddy of mine from grad school. And since he's been here, he's written 3 full length features that he's now finished. He's booked, you know, 10 guest stars since he's been here because, we party hard, but we also work hard because this isn't a hobby for us. This is how I make my living. And so, you know, if I don't put in my time, I take money and food, money out of my mouth and food out of my pockets. Wait a sec.
How young were you when you knew this was the path for you?
Well, I've been performing, acting ever since I was about 4 or 5. I grew up in State College, Pennsylvania. My dad was a professor at Penn State, and he did a lot of community theater. He was a singer and he did community theater. So I was involved in community theater by the time I was 4 or 5 and went with my dad and got into plays and that type of stuff. But this was central Pennsylvania. So it wasn't like I'm trying to be a movie star, you know, and I wasn't a Hollywood kid. I would do the plays and do musical theater when I went to high school outside Chicago. Then I got my first taste of, you know, doing some extra work in and around, you know, the Windy City, that type of stuff. But then when I went to college, I was playing sports, you know, played sports. I did improv. I was also doing the plays. So it was around my junior year of college where, you know, you have to pick a major. They're like, all right, so I'll fuck around.
What year is this?
89, 90. So I, you know, graduated high school 87. So around 89, 90, they said, look, man, pick something. So I actually designed my own major, and I created a film studies, you know, major. So now they have a lot of media studies. Film schools are booming. But yeah, back at the time, we didn't have
them. But, dude, Chicago's been improv capital for 20 years. So that seems like that would have been an easy route to go.
Well, when I was in Chicago, it was kind of high school. I was in boarding school. I wasn't necessarily – my head wasn't moving towards being improv, towards getting on Saturday Night Live or that. That my head wasn't anywhere near that when I was in high school. And also, you know, going to high school outside Chicago and then coming to California for school, I said to myself, if I'm never cold again, it'll be too soon. Because that wind comes off the lake in Chicago and I was done with it. So when I got out to California, I'm like, done, dunsies, let's go. And so it kind of all caught up to me in my, you know, junior, senior year when I go, okay, let me stop messing around. I enjoy performing. I'm decent at it. Let me go ahead and get some more training. So that's why I decided to go and get my master's at University of California, Irvine.
Right. But you know, having talent and working hard, the things you're talking about, don't you think you probably would be where you're at still, like without school for it?
Yes and no. Okay. I answer the question, you know, this way. The thing about my business, Hollywood, acting, writing, producing, directing, all of these things. You don't necessarily need a degree in them in order to call yourself a professional. That's both the blessing and the curse of this industry, because it lures a lot of people out here who don't, you know, want to put in 2 or 3 years getting an AA degree or, you know, whatever. And so this is one of the only professions that you can just, you know, step off the plane, train, bus, automobile, and you are a professional. And so you go in and you audition, you know, you've been in the industry for 10 years and you're like, you got here when 10 minutes ago and now we're in the same room. How was that? Cause there's no barriers to entry,
right?
There's, you know, you don't have to have, like I said, I always say this, if you were born to be an actor, born to be a whatever, if you're born to be a doctor and you walk into a emergency room and you go, I'm here, I'm a doctor, y'all.
Right.
They go, good, because this guy's bleeding out, his neck. Where'd you go to medical school? Because we need to go ahead and get the carotid artery. And you go, medical school? Every episode of LA, you know, of ER, motherfucker, let's go. Hey, man, I'm born to be a lawyer. Oh, good, because this guy's on death row.
Right.
He'll be killed tonight at midnight if we don't get a thing from governor. Can you write up something? Where did you go to law school? Law school. L.A. Law, every episode, boom, born to be a lawyer. Fuck that shit. You can't do that.
Right.
As an actor, whatever you can. And so the question then becomes, what do you want to do? How are you going to train in order to get good? Some people do it by coming to Hollywood and finding great acting teachers and being rejected and being, you know, trial and error in Hollywood. My path was to, you know, go the academic path because I wanted to, you know, I wanted to be on stage. I wanted to, know that this was what I wanted to do and that I was good at it. Because this industry will also fucking destroy you if you have any woulda, shoulda, coulda, you know, second guesses in your mind. Oh, you know what? I've been here for 5 years. If only I would have done this with Beckham. I should have done that before. Because no matter how great you are, you're going to hear the word no as if it's the only word that anybody out here can say. No, 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 no. And so
here's what I try to explain to folks, because I'm a business owner now, and it was only after, you know, year like 4 or 5 as a business owner when I started making some decent money that I was like, oh, if I woke up every day and applied what I know now to entertainment, then I might have gotten somewhere, because you and I know, like, talent can get you really far. And you know what else gets you really far? Having a fucking killer work ethic and just being a guy people want to be around,
right?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's people like, you know, Michael Jordan or whoever, they say they're just highly talented overachievers. So they, so where they're starting, their baseline is already really, really good. And you add that to, you know, a maniac type of work ethic and drive, you're fantastic. But if you're not even really that talented and you still have a drive and you're going to do all right.
Yeah, there. Listen, there's you and I both know plenty of actors, comedians, singers, whoever, who've had a great career because they busted their ass, not because they're the funniest person or the best singer. I'm doing air quotes for the audio listeners.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's tough because here's what I also think happens. I went to school with a lot of incredibly talented people. I mean, just really good. There were times in school where I'd be on stage and I'd be watching, you know, in a scene with somebody watching them. And I'd be like, God damn, you're good. Have you watched? You know, and the director's like, say your fucking line. I'm like, what?
Sorry.
Say your line. He'd be like, but are you watching him? This guy's good.
That boy's good.
Real good. But the thing is, that can also hurt you because you come to town and you don't understand why after 2 or 3 years, as good as you are, you're not getting the breaks you believe you should be getting. So that frustration can mount, you know, when you are really, you know, really good. And I know a lot of people who are extremely talented who, you know, left the business because of the level of frustration they got because the industry did not award their talent as quickly as they believed it should have. And so they're like, I'm out.
Right. Well, I only once I started a business and, you know, for me, getting married and having kids was like, okay, like somebody's got to feed these people. I better get to work. Only after doing that did I realize how incredibly lazy I was, Kelly, and how I was, you know, the stereotypical, let's go to the coffee shop and bitch about, why did that guy get Montreal? Why did that guy get a sitcom? Why aren't I getting it? So instead of actually putting in the work, right, I wanted to sit around and bitch. And now I can laugh at it. You know what I mean? Like, wow, I was an idiot.
Yeah, I've always said, look, I never want to be that guy at the end of the bar talking about how Hollywood fucked him over.
Right.
you know, how they were, you know, Hollywood should have given you this or should have given them that. And they'll sit there and they'll bitch. And then again, you know, you'll talk to them about what their work ethic is and how much time they actually put in. And you go, you really expect it to succeed? Here's an analogy that I always use. I use, you know, again, we're talking about going to school, whatever. I use the college analogy in that everybody listening has at least gone probably to high school, or they at least understand the structure of high school. They understand right. It's 4 years, same with college. You understand it's 4 years. So here's what happens in Hollywood a lot. You're a senior and a freshman comes into your room and is crying his eyes out. You're like, what happened? They go, this was the first time I was away from my family. I did really well. It was hard to get adjusted, but I worked hard and I got A's. And so, okay, what's wrong? You go, I'm not graduating. You go, but you're a freshman. I know, but didn't you hear me? I had great grades and it was tough to get along. And I was out here and they're not going to let me graduate. Motherfucker, you're a freshman. You have sophomore year to go through. You have junior year to go through. You have 3 more years. What I believe happens in Hollywood, you have a lot of freshmen crying because they're not graduating.
Or master's degrees.
Yeah, or whatever. But just in terms of, and so I asked them, okay, look, it's going to take people who, you know, succeed in Hollywood. Overnight successes are here 10 years. Right. You know, people start to succeed after 5 or 6. And I ask people, well, how long have you been in town? Well, 6 months. Right. What do you realistically expect to get after?
Listen, I, the same thing happens again in other people's businesses. They start a business, they open up a shop, and in 6 months they go, well, this didn't work out. And it's like, well, you know, customers, people think you just literally turn the lights on.
Yeah.
And customers are going to come in. So no. I want to ask you, so like you started working – if I follow your IMDb and or Wikipedia, which may or may not be exactly correct, when you start working in the early 90s and you get Drew Carey, which is like the first, like sort of, it looks like your first sort of recurring thing.
Yeah. Did that you was think, more or less.
Did you think like, okay, I've turned some corner now and now my phone will always ring? Did you think that? I know you didn't stop working hard, but did you think?
No, okay. You know what? I necessarily, because like I said, because I'm a central Pennsylvania kid, and I think I look at myself as a journeyman, you know, actor. I'm a bread and butter central Pennsylvania kid who has a 9-to-5 work ethic. And this just happens to be the industry that I've chosen. So when I, you know, booked the Drew Carey, like in around 94, 95, you know, whenever that was, and it was my recurring, I looked at it as a stepping stone. I'm like, okay, cool. I got through freshman year pretty cool. And I, you know, got into honors classes for my sophomore year. I've never been one that thinks that this is it. This is going to do it. I'm never going to have to look back and no, because if you do, you're going to again, drive yourself crazy because you're always going to look around and go like, well, why does this guy get Montreal? Why did this guy get, you know, I did stand up for a minute only because, you know, I was like, they're just handing stand up there on TV shows. And I'm going to do stand up not because I love it or I have a passion for it, but that's how you get a show. Right. And no, it wasn't necessarily. And so what I found was that, again, if you want to be a good stand-up, you got to put in the time, man. You got to put in, be up there every day. You have to try to find those 5 minutes, you know, on the, and it just wasn't where my heart was. And so I said, let me go ahead and get out of the way, you know, of the people who want to put time and effort into
that. That was very kind of you because that was, you know, you talk about the freshman showing up. So I started in Boston, which is a phenomenal scene, right? And by the time I left Boston, you know, it's you and let's say 200 people against the world. And, you know, you're obviously in competition, but like you rolled the gig together. You know, you've heard all the stories. If you listen to any of these podcasts nowadays, three guys get in the car and you go and it's you against the world and you do it. And it's like, yeah, it's us against them. And you move to LA and there's 20,000 of you and the same, I'm trying to get 5 minutes of the improv. And on the left or the right of me is not just my peers or people that are a little ahead and a little behind, but the girl from an acting class whose acting coach said, go try stand-up, and Drew Carey, the biggest comedian in the world at the time. Now I'm fighting for stage time with these two these two things. And it's like, what? Like,
it's crazy. Because you should be like, you know what? Look, I at least put in enough time so that this chick, she, you know, I can get in before her but she's sleeping with the owner, so she's gonna get time over you, so
or just flirting with the booker, not even, you know what I mean? That's just the way it is. And so this was like a mind blower to me, and again, being the entitled prick that I was, it's like, well, I've been doing this 4 years, which by the way is nothing, but at the time I thought had earned me something. And so, you know, again, I look back on this idea that, you know, sadly so many folks have, but including me when I was young, which is this entitlement thing of like, well, I'm here, LA, please open your doors for me, because of course they're giving, you know, that line from Swingers, they're giving away sitcoms at the airport.
It is again. And part of the thing that has sustained me is that I do have, you know, that central pencil. I keep going back to it, that work ethic, that I remember this. So when I went to school with kids who, every day before school, they would do like 2 hours of chores. Then they would go to school, you know, from, you know, till 9 to 3 or whatever. Then they go home and they would do chores again. And then they would do homework. And then they would go to bed so that they can get up and do it all again. That's hard work, man. So when I'm out here and I'm talking to people who are, you know, what do? I'm a writer. How many hours a day do you put into it? Two, maybe three, but it's hard because the Starbucks is so, oh, it's so crowded and somebody got this chair I usually sit in. And you're like, motherfucker, are you kidding? What we do, you know, we're not breaking a sweat. We're not breaking rocks in a hot sun. You're not standing out there with a stop and a slow sign and 100 degree. I mean, if you just put in the work into your chosen craft. If you are a writer, find a way to write. If you are a director, find a way to direct. If you are an actor, find a way to act. And so people that don't put in 8 hours a day towards their chosen field should not call themselves a professional at that chosen field. Choose something else. The unfortunate thing is that, you know, even though people have a strong work ethic, and I've dealt with this with a lot of people – they misconstrue the work ethic with the work that needs to be done in this business. So if I hear another actor tell me that they're not a good networker, full stop,
right,
as if they're asking me to tell them how to succeed without being a good networker, I go, then fucking learn, man. Learn how to be a better networker. People act like they don't have the ability to put, you know, another arrow in the quiver,
right?
You know, another tool in the toolbox. You know what? Grow, learn, become a good networker. Put in your time. If, you know, if you're an actor, I always say this, 8 hours. And that 8 hours can be whatever. It can be an hour and a half at the gym because you need to stay in shape to look good for, you know, if you're playing an ingenue or you're playing a leading band, that's part of it. A part of the 8 hours can be watching the two of the new shows that come out because you might audition for it. So you start to understand the feel and the rhythm of that show. That might be 2 of the hours. 2 of the hours might be following up for an hour with people that you met at a party the day before. Right. It could be a number of things. When people tell me they don't have stuff to do or they don't know what to do or they're bored or I'm like, because I always have shit to do and I've done all right.
Right.
So how is it I still got shit to do and I've done well and you ain't done shit? And how's that working out?
I appreciate your, you know, your work ethic and your and your attitude about all this. However, you got to tell me, there's got to be a gig or two that you were up against somebody for that you did not get, or like a guy that you're always in the same rooms with and he gets more than you and you're like, oh, that motherfucker.
Oh, yeah. There's people like, there's some I got. I remember I was up for this big, you know, I've been here now 20 some odd years. So I remember being up for, it was a show called The Practice. It came down to like me and D.L. Hughley.
The Ally McBeal spinoff.
Was it that? It was called The Practice, and it was like not Dylan. I forget exactly who it was, but it was a crime, you know, law drama,
right?
You know, and I think I booked it, you know, and D I'd seen around. And I'm like, good luck to you with your career. I wonder how you're gonna do, DL. Smash Cut, he has his own sitcom like 2 years later. I'm like, hey, what's up? What up, dog? How you,
right,
been, man? So, I mean, again, there's, you know, there's a lot of times that, you know, you walk into a room and you see like a guy who's just like a little taller and a little better looking, and you're like, oh, fuck. And so you're like, the casting director's like, bring in Kelly so they have a choice.
Right.
We know you're going to go with, right.
So I would like to talk to you about that because, you know, auditioning, like job interviews, right, which people can relate to, like some people are better at it than others, right?
Mm-hmm.
And some people aren't, and that might be a hindrance to them. So for you, you know, you've obviously done it a lot. I assume you know a lot of these casting directors. And, you know, I've always heard the goal is not to be attached, right? Just show up, do your thing, walk out. Like, do you have a specific, you know, this long into it, like, do you have a specific process or do you have to talk to yourself like out of being attached to it?
Well, look, there's always times when you're up for something that, you know, it's not that you put more pressure on yourself, but you'd like to get, you know, cause you're like, oh, this could be the game changer. This might be the second house someplace. This, because of some of the guys who brought you the last 4 shows that ran 20 years. I'm like, oh, this could,
right,
this could be real good. Right. This could be real good. But the thing about it is you become detached, not because you don't care or you don't want to get it, but because there's only so much you have control over. So if it's an audition for a huge role, I'll take it as seriously as an audition for, you know, like a regional commercial or something.
Right.
Here's kind of how I, you know, have looked at auditioning. And again, I'm a salesman, and what I'm selling is Kelly Perrine products and subsidiary, you know, products. So, you know, if I get 10 auditions, I figure I'll get 4 callbacks,
right,
because there'll be 6 times you're too tall, too short, too black, too white, too red, too this, too that. Somebody, the director has a thing that's going to go. There's just 6 you're just not even really going to be in on. There's 4 that they'll go, oh, you know what? Okay, give them a call back. They, you know, they'll give you a good look, and then you can kind of go in there and really kind of give it to them, and just and I'll say something about that in a minute, and then one, I'm gonna book. That's, for me, it's just simple mathematics. I prepare, I do my work, I make strong choices, I do that. So you give me 10 auditions, I'm gonna book one job. You give me 10 auditions in a year, I will book one job a year. You give me 10 auditions a month, I'll book one job a month. Right. You give me 10 auditions. It's just that simple. And if you're not getting auditions, then your job is to figure out why. Do you need new headshots? Do you need a new agent? Do you need new manager? Do you need to get better? You know, it's all that stuff. It's process of figuring out how in my chosen career can I get more customers, get more auditions, get more bookings, that type of shit. The same way,
interesting you mentioned headshots. So when I did stand up in 96, I did stand up 96 to 05-ish, right? And the way we got work was, word of mouth, and I would go to the post office I forget which post office in the middle of Hollywood, but that's the one I would go to.
There's one on Cole, I believe. C-O-L-E.
I had a P.O. box there for years. Anyway, and I would stick a VHS tape in the box, right?
Yeah.
And I would mail it, U.S. Priority Mail, and wait to hear back. And the funniest thing is, if you ever get to a comedy club and you look and there's just stacks and stacks of tapes that I've never even fucking watched. But I assume nowadays, right, that it's all digital, isn't it? Like, I assume, like, you've got a little EPK, right? And you just go, boop, do we like this guy or not like this guy?
Yeah, I guess for comedians, look, they're looking at it now on the computer instead of in these VHS tapes. It just, that's how you see folks now. Headshots, they used to be in black and white and used to have four looks. Here's me as a fireman. Here's me as the doctor. Here's me as a schoolgirl. I mean, you're like, get that stupid fucking Zed cars. You did. And then went to color. And so you just spent like $900 getting these four black and white photos done.
Right.
And then they're moving to color. Then you have to, God damn it. Then you have to, what they want is that they want a 3/4 shot. So they get your head and half of your torso. Right. Then you spend $900 getting that. And then they move to, we want more. We want it to hit. You're like, God damn, decide. And because at the end of the day, it's about, you putting on a fireman's outfit doesn't make you a better for the role of a fireman. Costumes is going to give you a fireman outfit. A lot of times casting directors, they go, well, we have to see him with a stethoscope to think he could play come on.
So when you got the UPN show, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you always hear people talk about, even the most famous shows that ever lived, like Cheers, Seinfeld, they're like, oh, we thought we'd get canceled after one season. So that one lasted a few. And did you feel like, okay, I feel like this one's got a little run to it?
Well, yeah, again, there's nothing better than being on a series regular on a show. It's the greatest. And when you're on sitcoms, it's almost, like you feel like you're stealing money because you go to work for, I talk about like a 9-to-5 work ethic. You get to the set at 10, you do a read through on one of the days and you can go home at 12. And I'm like, you want me to sweep up or something? I'll keep helping. You want me to put out some Danish? What do you got? Because I put in 8. I can go home. Okay, cool. And so when you're doing a show and then you've done the first year and you get picked up for a second and you have like a summer break, you're like, oh, this is, I'm gonna go golf. I'm gonna go to Vegas. I'm gonna spend everything I just made. It's great because you can also start to work on your character development. The writers start to understand how to write for you.
Right.
They know what you do. So you come back and, some of the jokes are sharper and your character. So it's great, man. So that's why when you're auditioning for something that's a series regular, it's not that there's more pressure, but you're like, ooh, this could be a good one.
And so when it ends, when they say we're not getting picked up or you find out through Variety, as some people do, like, is it like a massive bummer? Or is it like, all right, I'll get another gig?
Well, I mean, look, you're not the first actor who's ever, had a show that's either been canceled. For one-on-one, I did the first 4 years. They had a fifth season that was just with the kids, and I think they moved to to California or something. But we had 4 years. I think our contracts were coming up to be, you know, to be negotiated, renegotiated, and they were going to have to pay us, you know, some more cash. So I think I was in Vegas talking about playing golf, and the executive producer gave me a call and said, "Oh yeah, you know what? They're going to go in a different direction next year." I go, "Oh, I'll miss you on set when I come." She goes, no. No, they're talking about you're gone. I'm like, "Oh, I'm gone." That's the difference. Oh, shit. I misunderstood what you were saying. I got to call my contractor and tell him to stop putting that addition on the house that I was going to use with the season 5 money.
Right.
It is a bummer only because you know you're kind of thrown back into the – you know, let's do it again, mix. Let's get back into this, into the grind. But it's part of the job. And so if you're lucky, you squirrel away a little money. If you're lucky, you haven't gotten, you know, too many baby mamas out there and you squirrel away a little cash and you go back to going, how do I get my next 10 auditions?
Right. Well, I think that's great. And again, I think it's the same thing, right? For people that start businesses and they don't want to do the work, and you know, they got to make, you know, 100 phone calls, like forget 10, like they got to make 100, and make that happen on a weekly basis.
But I guess what I do, just because I'm an actor, I really don't see myself differently than anybody else who's out there working to grow a business, working to, you know, put food on the table, working to sustain a life and make it better for, you know, their kids or whoever. I'm a journeyman. I didn't come out to Hollywood necessarily to be a star, because I could walk down the street right now, you know, after 20 some odd years, after, like, you know, Drew Carey show and One on One, and I had a show with Flavor Flav where we played brothers, and I was just
on Nickelodeon.
Flavor Flav.
What was the name of the show?
We'll talk about it. It was fun, but I can still walk down the street and people, they'll either give me a double take or they'll go, "Hey man, aren't you that guy from? Wait a sec, weren't you? No, you do you go to my church? Right. You owe me $20, motherfucker. If you don't get," I'm like, "Man, I don't like it. It might have been that one Seinfeld episode that I did that everybody has seen. So who knows? So again, that's why I think I'm a journeyman.
Which Seinfeld are you in? Which
it was an episode where Kramer was got addicted to cafe lattes, and so he snuck a cafe latte into the movie theater, and he spills it, and it's hot, and he does all this Kramer stuff.
Right.
And I'm the usher who comes down and I'm like, "Hey, what do you got there? One of those cafe lattes? Come on, here we go, snap it up. Here we go, coffee boy." And so I did that 20 some odd years, and still to this day, people are like, "Oh man, I saw you on Seinfeld." And it was beautiful.
Do you get tiny residual checks from that?
Oh, like 40 cents.
Right. That's what I mean.
You know, $1.20 because they bundle it for Uruguay. dude, it's kind of fun.
How is that working with streaming nowadays? Because I assume, so from what I understand, you know, people being money people and big networks being big networks is like, they don't even tell you how many people have watched it. And I assume they do that so they can keep your money down, right? Like, you might have those kids might have the number one show on Netflix for Stranger Things, but we don't know how many people have viewed it, right?
Yeah, again, I don't think I have anything that I was a series regular on streaming right now that I know of. That's a question. I should find out.
Hulu shows everything, dude. So you may want to look into that.
Yeah, I should. But if I did, you know there was something on, I'd check into it. But again, part of the philosophy that keeps me sane in this industry is I'm not trying to chase down every time I'm on something has aired or how much they owe me, and because I don't want to get jaded about thinking that everybody's out to screw me
And I totally understand that. I just mean generally, like, I just assume like you've seen contracts change or that kind of thing.
Well, a lot of times, but it's your manager and your agent kind of. Right.
They work all that stuff out.
Yeah, they kind of can go, you know, work all that stuff out. And again, I gotta trust that they're, you know, giving me my fair share. But
you also don't want to wake up one day and be like, "Oh, it turns out that my money guy."
My money guy is my money guy because he got all my money.
Right, he went to Peru. But you. you've done like a ton of TV, and is that just something you thought, you know what, I'm getting a lot of gigs here, I'll stick with it, or if you wanted to have like a big breakout movie role?
Yeah, you know what, I've done a handful of movies, and I also now I write and direct, and I kind of have started to create the stuff I want to be on. It's not that television was the medium per se that I chose to be in. You know, I booked a couple things, and the sitcom world kind of, you know, did well for me. And so I kind of just, you know, ran with that, and we'll run with that until the wheels, you know, come off. But what I'm not doing is I'm not trying to go, but what I really want to do is right. be a movie star, and let me look this gift horse in the mouth.
Right.
No, I mean, it you know, I'm 51, and that's a good age for, you know, men to kind of move into, you know, more unique leading man territory, you know what I'm saying? And okay. that, you know, I'm not leading man in terms of make sure Kelly takes his shirt off in every movie. They're like, make sure Kelly keeps his shirt on in every fucking thing he does. So I kind of have to find how my uniqueness can be worked into some of the opportunities that are going to be coming. But oddly enough, I do think that, you know, by whatever you want to call the break, not necessarily the big break, the break that might get me some looks in a way that I haven't, is going to be something more dramatic than comedic. Because still, here's the tough thing I think about being funny, but not necessarily a comedian, in that if an executive wants to build a show around you, they can build a show around a comedian who lets you know very quickly what their story is. Yeah, I'm a gay Jewish man who grew up in Pittsburgh. Okay, we're going to do it. I'm a lesbian woman who grew up in the, you know, the Midwest. Who knows?
Right.
You know? And so with me, I'd have to be like, okay, well, Kelly, what's your show about? What's your voice? What's your perspective? You know? So it's always been kind of tough for me to kind of sell my own stuff, because people, they go, you're funny, but we don't quite know what your perspective is. And so it's been up to me now. You talk about the work. It's kind of up to me to figure out how to break through that and get and become number one on the call sheet.
Well, and when you want to, the stuff that you want to make, is it just like, hey, I might as well make projects I want to be in, or because you sure. like, I don't know, you see that as a path to going somewhere else?
Well, again, I see it as one, work, man. You know, TV is great because, again, you get a show that goes, you're working for, you know, the next few years. Movies, one, you only work for a few months if you're one of the leads, and then you don't know when it's going to come out. You don't know if it's going to be a hit. You don't know. There's a lot of unknowns in this industry. So if you're a person that really craves and is desirous of certainty, this isn't the business. You have to kind of straddle the unknown and kind of roll with it. So again, it's not that the television show that I'm trying to put together now would be a stepping stone to features. I'll just write the feature I want to be on, you know, and if whatever hits. And I'll, you know, reverse engineer my next gig based on what successes I have. You know, sometimes you just have to follow your yeses, and you'll get where you're supposed to be going.
Is that your TED Talk? Follow your yeses.
Yeah, just follow you. Sometimes follow your yeses. And also, all this is, again, all these philosophies are not new. They're not, you know, your mom told you to believe in yourself. Everybody's mom didn't do it. Fuck, I don't know. Work harder. Do it. These aren't brand new principles that I came up with. It's the same shit for everybody.
Right.
Put in more work. Work harder. Try to figure out what's going on. What you want to do? There's somebody out there that's succeeding at it. Just copy what they're doing. None of this is. You know, the pamphlet, the book could be this fucking thin. It's the same shit said differently.
Hey, do you know Bill Cott?
Oh yeah. I know.
Did you see that the Dana Carvey show documentary that just came out?
I did not, but I will watch it now.
So it's called Too Funny to Fail, right? And it's about how these guys created this show, and it's Carvey, Smigel, who's been a writer for SNL forever.
Yeah.
Steve Carell, right?
Nice.
Stephen Colbert, right? Like Louis C.K., like some of the funniest people ever, and Bill Cott. Like Bill is the sixth guy. And so Bill's in this documentary, like as much as they are. Anyway, go, it's really funny. Go watch it.
Yeah. You know, I'll check it out. But see, again, there's really no reason why Bill shouldn't be in
clearly,
that.
Clearly yeah. But you know, Bill left and came back.
I think I did know that because he also started a family.
Right. But most folks like, I mean, he's one of those guys that I was like, well, why did he leave? Like he's fucking hilarious character actor. Like, why did he leave? Right. But he's come back and he's worked since. So good for him.
Yeah. No, and again, like I said, dude, it can be tough to see people around you, you know, getting their shot after shot after shot. And you go, well, you know, sometimes you think, well, the only thing I can do is just leave. I just to be missed. It's like chasing a girl. You know, I've tried everything now. Just walk the other way. Right. You know, just get out.
What have you seen lately that you've really liked that's either just knocked your socks off or was really funny or anything really good?
Yeah, you know, like, I started watching Perry Mason.
Old school?
The new school with on HBO.
Oh, I didn't know there was a new one.
Yeah, there's a new one. Perry Mason, the guy who's on The Americans. Is on it,
dude. Americans. My wife and I fucking love that show.
Well, then you'd like Perry Mason. I don't binge watch a whole lot of stuff because I'm also out here trying to create my own stuff as well. So I really don't have all the time in the world to. I watch a lot of documentaries. I like to see I just watched that Bulls documentary because I went to high school in Chicago and so they were just on the come up.
Right.
But yeah, I like to watch documentaries on successful people. And it's in successful teams and, you know, the ups and downs that you go through. Because, again, you'll see a through line of just, you know, stick-to-itivism. Just, you know, just don't quit. Your break will come. So I'm trying to think what else. Yeah, I'll tell you what, dude, I'm a huge Bachelor and Bachelorette fan.
Oh, really?
I love it. I love it. I love seeing as many times as I've gotten rejected. I love seeing hot girls get picked off. Like, boom, out. Boom, you five, out. You 10, boom, stay in a bikini. But you three, gone. Love it.
Okay, I've never been a big Bachelor fan, but okay.
Well, but it's fun. I root for the kids. Maybe that's why at 51, never been married. I root for them. I root for love, man. Not for everybody. Not everybody wants to be loved. But so if those kids can find love.
Have you turned down a reality show? Have you been offered a reality show that you turned down?
Like where they follow me around and
like anything,
they want to
like anything.
I do. No. Again, I don't think I'm on anybody's radar like that. Let me think. Have I slept with a Kardashian? No, I've tried. Like everybody else, I've tried.
Could you tell us the most famous person that you have slept with, as long as they're not currently married? Look at the look on his face.
the thing is, dude. I mean, like I said, I'm the funny guy. I'm like. Oh, Kelly, you've been buying me drinks for the past 5 hours. You are so funny. I'm going to go sleep with him. And I'm like, what? What the?
Sometimes funny works, though. Come on.
Later, I'll call you. I wish I had, you know, bigger
you
Hollywood.
Date, you didn't date anybody? Did you date anybody that then went on to become super successful?
Not for lack of trying. I'll hit on Kerry Washington right now.
She's not horrible looking.
Not bad at all. I'm you know, equal opportunity. Jennifer Aniston is not a black or white thing. Who's a hot Asian? I'll hit on. I love him. I just can't get him.
Right. And you think you might be a bachelor the rest of your time?
Yeah, please. Yeah. See, the thing I want to say, yeah, but it just you don't hear anybody. I don't have a role model for somebody that has said it and. People are cool with it. So I'm afraid. I'm afraid to just come out and say, I think I'm going to be a bachelor for the rest of my life because people are like, oh, that can't be true. But just like maybe I'm part of the 2% that don't want a relationship, that are fine doing what I want to do. And again, like I said, when I want to do it, that doesn't mean I don't love the company of, you know, the fair sex. I do. But I like to do what I want to do, you know?
I hear you, man. Well, listen, do you have social media or anything you want to plug?
Well, you know what? I'm at Facebook and pretty much Instagram. On Instagram, I'm at Kelly Perrine. Twitter, I'm Kelly, Kelly Perrine, Perrine, 47. 47 is my lucky college number. So at Kelly Perine. Kelly P-E-R-I-N-E 47. Oh, Instagram is just my name, at Kelly Perine. And there's some cool stuff on there. I'm doing a thing called a banner project where every day I put up a new rant about what's going on in the world. Oh, so I lean left. Yeah, that's me. That's 100.
You're in Hollywood and you're mm-hmm. black and you yes. lean left.
Yes.
That's a big surprise.
That is.
Well, listen, if you are feeling like you're getting a little too, like you're not quite connected. I live in the West End here in Atlanta. I live 2 miles from a lot of crazy shit. And sometimes a lot closer, but
yeah, you're in Atlanta, baby. You're in Chocolate Hollywood. That's all right. Yeah.
Have you come here? Have you shot anything here?
I shot one or two things there. It's been a minute. But I mean, whenever I've been to Atlanta twice, two or three times, and every time I'm there, people are beautiful, man. They're fantastic to me. You know, they kind of reckon they know where they know me from a little more on there. Oh,
what font is this?
It's called what, spray paint?
I know, no one's asked you this so far. But this is what I'm asking you.
The font of the banners.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's called spray paint.
I'm impressed.
It's called spray paint. Yeah. Of course, a black man vandalism. It's gotta be spray paint. It can't be Arial or the Times font. It has to be spray paint. But you know, that project there that you're looking at, you know, I've been doing every day for 100 days, and actually tomorrow is day 100. And it's been a labor of love. It's you know, it's not that it's been a pain in the ass, but I mean, I gave myself 100 days of homework.
but that's what a commitment is to something, is like, okay, this is awesome. Now I don't necessarily feel like it, but I got to get up and do it.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, I'm at 100, I'll probably go another 25, 50, something like that. I'll decide. It's like with the poker games back in the day. When there'll be a day where I go, you know what? I'm done. So on to the next. And I'll do something different, and I'll turn it into a coffee table book.
Right. Well, listen, I've wanted to catch up with you for a while, but I'm glad we got to do this. And if you're here, hit me up. And then when I'm in LA next, which isn't that often, but I'll come by.
Hey, man, I'll give you a month. I'll give you a month on my couch. I can't believe they kicked you out after three. That's
ridiculous.
Can you
believe that? Can you be how selfish that was?
I will see them 3 months, and I'll raise them the three weeks, and I'll raise them a week.
Well, listen, I appreciate that, except now I live with four other people, though. I live with a wife and three children.
Well, God bless you. God bless
That's
you.
That's a lot of people. When I was out in L.A., it was just me, and now I've got all these other people.
Yeah, now I have a pretty big – I have a housemate, and we're cool. But, I mean, dude, I got these two dogs, and they, like, want to eat every day, yo.
What are your dogs' names?
One is called Penny, and that's my little female, my beautiful – that's my heart. And they're both rescues, Penny and Whizzle, like a penny whizzle. So I call him Wiz. I call him Wiz, Whizzle, Wiz Khalifa, Wiz One, Wiz Two, for Sizzle.
great dog name.
Yeah, you know, fun dog. And so yeah, those are the two that when they don't mind how late I stay out.
Right.
They don't mind if I come home smelling like other dogs.
As long as they get
they don't mind, man.
All right, dude. I got to get running. I'll send you a link when it's up, though.
Do your thing. Love you, brother. Miss you. Keep you know, raising that family. And anything I can do to help, let me know.
Appreciate it, brother. Be well.
And there you have it. That was Kelly. Thank you so much for joining. Next time you see him, you're gonna be like, "That's the guy that Matt talked to." So as always, I'm always looking for good guests of the Atlanta podcast, as I always ask my Atlanta-based guest, hey, who should I have next in the Atlanta podcast? I think I might have even asked Kelly that. But anyhow, if you have a guest here in the ATL that you want to hear from, let me know. Shoot me a note. I'm Matt B. Davis on iCloud. I'm ATL Podcast on Instagram. Super easy to get a hold of. Thank you so, so much for listening. Hope you guys are all staying safe out there. And take care, ATL.